Joseph.
I'm Dan.
And we are here to talk about the... already complications. This film was...
Inevitably.
This film should... I should say 1990 film, yes. The Favour.
Yeah.
Instead, I have to say the 1994 film, The Favour, because the company that was going to release this, let's say it, downright despicably horny film.
It's so horny.
It's the horniest film we've watched, and we've watched a lot of horny films.
Well, maybe not surprisingly, given that young Brad Pitt is who he is.
True.
It's also clumsily horny.
Yeah. It's horny in like an adolescent teenager way.
Mm.
This film was meant to come out in 1990. Orion went bankrupt, and instead it came out 4 years later when Brad Pitt was a big deal.
Yeah. We surely had something to do with it coming out, I imagine.
What happens when these companies go bankrupt is that all of the films are like, who knows if this is going to come out, right? It becomes like this big thing. It's not clear if they're ever going to be released.
That would suck if you'd made a movie and it got stuck in hell.
Your life's work. Yeah. Can you imagine you're like a young screenwriter and you go to Hollywood and
you sell your film. It gets made.
Yeah, it's about like your mum dying of cancer. Yeah,
and then,
see you later.
Unthinkable.
So all those films suddenly go into flux, and the fact that this came out of flux would be because of Brad Pitt.
Okay.
It'd be like... we've talked about this weirdly happening before with Jennifer Lawrence and House at the End of the Street.
Yeah.
That film wasn't like tied up in legal battles, but it was gonna be like straight to DVD, and they were like, eh, she's a big deal. Let's chuck it out there.
Mm.
Before we get to that, Dan has reminded me we have urgent festive Brad Pitt-mas Christmas... Yeah. Stuff.
There's nothing wrong with extended celebration. And I have to apologize because I think the day we recorded the Christmas podcast, which was a little while before Christmas, I got a notification to say my present for Joseph had arrived. It had been ordered online. I mean, I think I'd ordered it with a reasonable amount of advance notice, and I felt terrible that it wasn't there on the day, but that has allowed us to extend the gift giving. So Joe was incredibly generous with his gifts to me. We'll see how this goes down.
This was our Christmas.
Merry Christmas.
Thank
Merry
you.
Merry Pitmas.
Merry Pitmas. So Dan has handed me a well-wrapped, better wrapped than me. If you listen to the Pitmas episode, you'll know that Ida, the greyhound, my dog, loves wrapping paper. She doesn't love wrapping paper at the moment, because if you listen to that episode, you'll also know that she badly sprained her ankle. She is still on codeine. Poor dog. I'm opening it. It's got, I see some tattered jeans and some knees. I'm unfolding. And it's the most extraordinary photograph of Bradley J. Pitts on a tote bag. Daniel, it's incredible.
I thought it would suit your entire vibe.
I'm slightly speechless. It's not just... I said when I was unfolding it, his knees were exposed. He had tattered jeans.
Yeah.
One knee is just like straight up out.
It's
not a hole. Like that's no, it's you're not really
yeah, it's not even
pants.
Ripped jeans. The rip is the main feature, and then the jeans are attached to it.
Dan, you know, I hate Christmas. I had a depressing Christmas. This has made Christmas worth it. It's a beautiful work of art. It's also, I mean, we talk and we will talk about the hair of Brad Pitt in The Favour.
Mm.
The photo of Brad Pitt that Dan has on this put here is Brad at maybe his best hair.
Yeah, I think
very long, flowing shoulder golden length. Locks, shoulder length hair. Anyway, it is extraordinary. You know,
we'll
what?
Have to post a picture on.
We will
Twitter,
because we didn't even post. I gave you that biography, and we didn't.
I'll post that. Yeah, of course. I didn't think to. I'll post some excerpts.
I think this should be like my work uni bag.
Yeah,
it would very neatly fit like my
notebooks. It's a humble size. I think you can fit notebooks, maybe a laptop in there. It's not oversized. A little smaller than the New Yorker tote.
Did I tell you that someone gave me, and I left it at where they gave it to me, someone gave me a Brad Pitt mug because they knew that I did this podcast for Christmas. Maggie Nelson, the philosopher and author.
Yeah, I can see her books to the right of your my right, your left.
She's just behind my head. She wrote a book called Bluettes about her love of the colour blue. Early in that book, she says, a great thing about writing a book about the colour blue is that everyone gives you blue presents because they know you're interested. Having
Brad
Pitt cast.
Yet to happen to me.
Brad Pitt
shit. Yeah, well, yeah.
It's extraordinary. Thank you, Dan.
My total pleasure.
It's unbelievable that his entire leg is out.
I know. I just couldn't. I couldn't get over the image.
He looks very skinny here.
What era do you think that is? What year pit do you think?
Before the favour.
Yeah, I think so too.
Maybe way before the favour.
It's got to be post Thelma and Louise, right?
I don't know. He's so buff in Thelma and Louise. He's not. He's kind of skinny skater boy.
He's wearing is it a denim shirt over a t-shirt?
It's fantastic. And
big lips.
You know who he's a little bit like here? He looks a little bit Timothée Chalamet.
That's true, actually. The kind of voluptuousness of his face.
Yeah, like very sensual, feminine, like unthreatening, sexually unthreatening, but like beautiful.
Mm.
It's fantastic.
And he's very casual. He's also, we should just say the background, he's slouching on a what looks like the railing of a motel.
If he fell backwards,
with like LA behind him, yeah, for sure.
Don't fall backwards.
No. What that's the real sliding doors moment.
If he dies in a photo shoot, what are we doing with our lives?
Not this.
No, we're doing maybe.
Yeah, oh,
just
true.
A very short.
It's a true crime podcast joke. Oh, Brad Pitt
joined this photo shoot. No, we love him. You know, we've had a break from recording.
Mm. I've been away.
Sure.
Yeah.
We talk about missing Brad a lot. I really missed him.
Yeah, it was nice to have him back in our company, I think. It felt like a long stretch without Brad.
What are we going to do when this podcast is over? Because I genuinely think I'll still need like a regular dose of Pitt.
There's a really excellent podcast about Twin Peaks I listened to while I was watching Twin Peaks Season 3 called Twin Peaks Rewatch. And they rewatched all of Seasons 1 and 2 and then in preparation for Season 3 coming out. Rewatching
Season 2 is a rough task.
So, yeah, it was hard to even listen to. I mean, they're great. Anyway, I listened to Twin Peaks Rewatch. Great podcast. Some American guys. But I'm not saying we do this. What would a Brad Pitt Rewatch podcast look like? What if this podcast just became us infinitely? Like, you know, the podcasts where the worst of idea of all time where those guys rewatch, like, Grown Ups 2 52 times in a year.
Which I don't like as a premise because Grown Ups 2 is a pretty good film.
Okay, well, I haven't seen it, but sure. I mean, it's still an interesting...
I think they do it with Jack and Jill, which is even more insulting because that's an even better film than Grown Ups 2.
Al Pacino from The Irishman fame. It would
Dunkachino.
That's right. That's a funny bit.
Yeah.
What happens if for the rest of our lives we're just cycling through Brad Pitt's filmography? How does it change? Like you compare our River Runs Through at sixth watch in like probably 8 years.
Yeah. Like a Boyhood situation. Yeah we keep doing this forever.
Just entangled in Pitt. It seems. I mean, I think we want to explore other horizons.
Sure. In our lives.
Sure. You. Yeah.
We could. But, we could like every 5 years. To relaunch the podcast.
Yeah, that'd be interesting.
We could pick 4 actors and cycle them for the rest of our lives.
Yeah.
Or 4 would be a long time.
That would be a long time.
Unless some of them had quite short filmographies.
Yeah. Yeah.
I'm just obsessed with, like, what if we would just did Brad Pitt and Cameron Diaz back and forth forever?
Pitt Diaz. Yeah. Yeah.
Look at that. Today we are talking about The Favour.
Yeah.
It will be... Here's what's become a weird fucking motto. A hard film to talk about.
Mm.
It is...
a mess.
Not really entirely a film.
It's pretty incoherent. It's not filmic. Does it have acts? Kind of. But barely.
It has...
It has transitions.
Yeah. It's a series of ideas that are kind of explaining themselves to you as they're going
on.
Yeah,
that's true.
I have one brief sidebar. Mm. We're also on a time limit. Dan has...
I gotta get to a dinner, unfortunately.
So this is like an exercise for us as the Brad Pitt cast. How quick can we, like...
Yeah.
What are we at now?
We're at 8 minutes. We're almost at 9 minutes.
Okay, we can do this.
So I think we can... I mean, this... To be honest, this is not a bad film. I would have felt rough if we'd had to do this for, like, Cool World. Because there's a lot to unpack.
But this film is...
I think of all the films, I'm the least interested. Like, I don't care about telling people about the plot.
No, because we could sound like crazy people. We could sit here and be like, and then she does this, and then he does this.
Yeah.
Before we do a little bit of she does this, he does this, I'm calling a Dan opinion to the court of public opinion.
What did I say?
We've had this discussion brewing on the back burner for a couple of weeks.
Uh-huh.
Dan thinks... The Rise of Skywalker is slightly better than Abysmal.
Yeah, I do. And someone is calling me about it.
Dan's phone going off immediately. It's J.J. Abrams. needs individual people to be like, Dan, quick, please, come on.
Don't make a fool of yourself. Or defend us.
Yeah.
Yeah, look, here's my experience of The Rise of Skywalker. In seeing, on reflection, a lot of it is unforgivable trash. Definitely, there are some decisions in it.
Should we give a brief spoiler?
Yeah, we're spoiling The Rise of Skywalker for the next 5 to 10 minutes. Skip forward 10 minutes, and then gradually work your way back. You'll find us. We're probably not going to talk. You'll work it out. It does enough Star Wars things to basically allow me not to be upset in the cinema completely. I'm like, oh, there's Harrison Ford.
Sort of,
for a few seconds. There's the X-Wing sounds. I love X-Wing sounds. Big fan of X-Wing sounds.
That sounds like you could have just watched a YouTube compilation of previous
films. Kind of. Adam Driver's pretty good.
He's not, though.
He's fine. He's definitely fine in the film. He does a decent job under the duress of what is obviously extremely poor direction.
To be honest, I'm struggling.
I'm struggling a little bit to remember it. I mean, a new planet. There's big waves. I'm pretty easy to please.
You are sometimes. Not easy to please. You do not have those requirements when we're watching different kinds of films. You don't. Your complaint of Drag Me to Hell was like, it's not doing enough. And now you're saying, like, I don't need anything to do anything but just make, like, spaceship sounds at me.
I just remember I walked out of it and was like, they made some fundamental... Like, obviously, Rey being granddaughter Palpatine is in fucking sane. Carrie Fisher is treated very disrespectfully, and that's extremely upsetting. And
they do, like... Park episode that they have to kill off Chef after Isaac Hayes, and they just use, like, tidbits of prior episodes to piece together. That's what fucking Carrie Fisher
the thing
like
that
in this film.
Kept coming to me is that when I was a teenager, a friend of mine and we made prank phone calls... And we used an Arnold Schwarzenegger soundboard.
Yeah.
And that's exactly what this felt like.
Having characters, say things for her so she can say, like, yes.
Yeah. Don't always trust a droid or whatever. Like, what the fuck are you talking about, Carrie Fisher? You have 8 lines and most of them are incoherent.
Yeah.
It was really sad. And it was obviously no chemistry on screen. Asking an enormous amount of Daisy Ridley in those scenes. That was genuinely
a number of people unfollowed me for saying my hottest take about that film, which is, I think... It asks nothing of Adam Driver, who is the best performer in the new series. I think Driver is actually extraordinary in these films. I think his performance in The Last Jedi is, no joke, his best performance ever. And I like Driver a lot. I think he's just another level in these films. I think Daisy Ridley is pretty bad. I think she's at her best in The Last Jedi because they don't ask her to do anything.
Yeah.
But the scene in this film where it's Ridley with, like, a cloak on, like, dark, evil Ridley trying to tempt good Ridley is embarrassing.
Definitely.
Like, deeply embarrassing.
Yeah.
I went in with... So I loved The Last Jedi. I was like, this film is a new direction for franchise filmmaking. It shows what you can do, how you can, like, honor the past... You know, I was so excited by The Last Jedi, so excited by what it suggested about what these movies could be. When it turned out that J.J. Abrams was going to come back and make the last one, I was like, oh, okay, it won't be as good as The Last Jedi. The Force Awakens, pretty good.
Yeah,
pretty
I thought it... I came out of the film, especially after the prequels, I think.
Yeah,
and
being like, oh, this is fine.
Yeah, it does the Star Wars thing.
So I thought, at the very least, what we were going to see was a slightly underwhelming... It could make boring choices. I was like, it's probably going to make boring choices. I thought the film was non-functional. I thought it's the most embarrassing Hollywood blockbuster I might have ever seen. I think it's worse than the prequels.
It's interesting.
It rends itself in two, trying to be 100 different things,
ends up being
deeply insulting to every single person sitting in the theater.
I thought that kept recurring to me was the Star Wars franchise has a lot of excellent concept artists working on it, because I did genuinely think it wasn't beautiful. It was poorly shot, but there were a lot of, like, strong images.
CGI gloom. It was like a second-rate Harry Potter movie. It was so dark.
I mean, I'm giving this movie, like, 4 out of 10.
I think it's a half-a-star film. Yeah. The Chewbacca was on another transport thing.
Oh, I hated that so much.
I thought I was going to have a cardiac arrest.
Yeah.
And then I just checked out. Then I was like, okay, this movie has no stakes, doesn't care about anything, has no interest
I would have been really happy if they killed Chewbacca. When that happened, I was like, oh, thank God.
Yeah, who cares?
When I thought they had murdered him.
Burn the fucking...
Yeah, sure. Well, let's not go that far. Giving him the medal at the end was one of the funniest things I've ever seen on film.
Did they give him a medal? I think I was on my phone by that.
So, right at the end when they're all having a party, they're like, and here Chewbacca is a medal, which obviously is a reference to the fact that in episode 4 he doesn't get one.
Yeah.
Which, I mean, that's hilarious, right?
That's filmmaking by committee. That's like, we are going to right the wrongs of the past.
Yeah.
I've seen that meme going around, which is like, The Rise of Skywalker, written and directed by Reddit. And I think it's true.
Yeah.
The way the film embarrassingly rushes to explain away The Last Jedi, one of the most important pieces of franchise filmmaking, it's
very funny. Disgusting. The putting the helmet back together.
I don't care that much. The helmet back together
is really funny.
With a chimp.
Yeah. A space chimp. Doing See, this is second space chimp of the year from following on from Ad Astra.
That's true.
So, this is interesting to me because where does your evaluation of movies as garbage and interesting in their garbageness, and maybe that even making them a good film, like you might say The Room is a good film. Why does this not fit into that?
That you asked me.
Yeah, I bet you have a good answer.
It strengthens what I feel about filmmaking. We said before, what makes The Room good is that it's a distinctive vision of one person who sees the world entirely differently from me and doesn't care about my opinion.
You know exactly why every single decision has been made in The Last Jedi.
And J.J.
Rise of Skywalker.
J.J. Abrams doesn't believe in any of the things he presents me to on screen.
No.
Film is not a mess because it's like J.J. Abrams being a weirdo, because he's not a weirdo. He's a corporate middle manager. He's showing me things he thinks that I want to see, and there's nothing I find more insulting than that. Because he's wrong about me.
Somewhere, and again, this might, like, whether or not this is true doesn't actually matter, because it makes sense within the universe of the film, or the universe of, like, Star Wars as franchise, rather. So I think I saw somewhere on Twitter someone say, the reason that Adam Driver has his helmet put back on is because, a theme park, the Star Wars theme park doesn't have the rights to Adam Driver's face, and they needed him in a particular scene in a ride or something to happen. It's probably not true, but it feels like that would make sense. Like, it would be like a Hasbro toy.
That's the most damning criticism of the film, is that you could believe that they're doing shit for a theme park ride, and that's what Martin Scorsese said when he said, like, that's why these films aren't art. How could you ever, even if you thought The Rise of Skywalker was, like, functional or good, how'd you ever walk out and go, like, that's art?
Oh, impossible.
I don't know if it fulfills anyone's requirement of art.
Which is interesting, because I think my consistent feeling is like, well, whatever, something can be art, because there's a lot of good art and there's a lot of bad art. It's not really about quality. But that doesn't, like, I've seen heaps of bad art that I'm more interested in, that I prefer to, like, at least reject than The Rise of Skywalker, which is totally scrutable.
Yeah, it's not... The comment... Calling The Rise of Skywalker not art, I don't even think that's... That's not a way of saying it's a bad film. Because there are films that I hate more than The Rise of Skywalker that are art. It's just... This is not... It's not a movie. It's a board meeting.
Yeah, I think that's important, yeah. Which, the story is, right? They had, like, five people... Well, in a room, going to be directed by
fucking... Who'd you
Colin Trevorrow?
Yeah, Trevorrow. Who then went off and made The Book of Henry, which is, like, inscrutable piece of serial killer.
I haven't watched that, but I have listened to, I think, 2 to 3 film podcasts about it. Yeah. And it sounds... I know, actually know this. I know the plot extremely
Brianna
well.
Brianna Elton is here.
It sounds insane. We're recording a podcast, Brianna.
Hello, Brianna.
Hi, guys.
Do you want to come in and tell... Oh, my God, the dog is extremely excited to see you. Do you want to come and just quickly say for the posterity on the podcast how much you hated Little Women?
No.
Why? Can I read your text messages?
Sure. Yeah, do that. I gotta eat something.
Brianna Elton.
Good to see you, Brianna.
Brianna has been in Little Women for the last 2 hours, sending me messages such as... Let me read them to you, because in order particularly, they were extremely funny.
Well, I hate
I hate this so much. It is quite possibly the worst thing I've ever seen. Oh, thank God, it's over. I could cry. And then this really insulting thing Brianna said... I hate that Timothy Chalamet or whatever the fuck his name is looks a bit like you. It's ruining your face for me.
Humble brag, Joseph.
I don't look like Timothy Chalamet.
No, I would look... You're a handsome man, but I'm not sure.
I have floppy hair.
Maybe that's it.
That's all.
Kind eyes.
Don't know if either me or Timmy Chalamet have kind eyes.
Mm.
I think The Rise of Skywalker is like a deep problem.
It's a terrible movie. I mean, that's... to talk about another podcast that... we both enjoy Blank Check, do this really interesting thing in their first iteration, where they're a Star Wars podcast, where they watch the prequels, Phantom Menace, Attack of the Clones, and Revenge of the Sith, as if they're films without any attached franchise. So it's like they pretend that they're just people who've come across these films. Oh, they didn't make any more films. They just made The Phantom Menace. What does this look like? Doing that to The Rise of Skywalker would be a really interesting exercise.
It's because not a film.
Yeah, it's not any medium with which we're familiar, really.
No. It just becomes like... I don't know what that is. Yeah. It becomes, like, completely incomprehensible.
Yeah.
Because, then you're like, why does Lando Calrissian look like he wants to fuck a, like, 20-year-old?
Yeah. And also, why does he say... Anyway. She says something like, I don't know where I'm from. And he's like, well, let's find out.
Yeah, that's the I want to fuck you line.
It's also... But it's the, like...
But it's his daughter, apparently. Yeah. Did you know that?
But again, like, how do we know? Like, it doesn't... I think I might have had something about that.
The Star Wars. Why doesn't the film
give me that information? Yeah.
Why does John Boyega throughout that film say, Daisy Ridley, I've got something to tell
which
you?
Which apparently. That he never tells you know what that's supposed to be.
Yeah, I'm force sensitive.
Which is not, because that.
That doesn't make sense as character beat anyway.
Also, it doesn't even make sense in the context of the franchise, because that's been. Isn't that used earlier with, like. There's Han and Leia? He's like, there's always something I wanted to tell you. That's in one of the 4, 5, and 6. I don't know. Whatever.
It's a real bad
problem. I think that's... I had a fine time watching it. I know it's a terrible movie.
It feels to me like real... My heroes are dead and my enemies are in power shit.
Yeah,
like,
sure.
Not only is J.J. Abrams, who I think is a talentless hack, although he wrote the music to Phantasm.
That's right.
So he has a background in B-grade shit. But not only is he a hack, he's gotten worse. And that's a scary...
Well, he's indication. A competent hack.
Yeah. Well, is he hurt by this film?
That's a really, really good question.
Abrams is someone who constantly apologizes for films. Do you remember when he apologized for the gratuitous nudity in Star Trek,
right? Yeah, that's right.
He went
right.
on all the talk shows that's to be like, really I'm funny. So sorry.
Yeah.
Which made me like him less somehow.
I understand that. Yeah. I mean, because it's disingenuous, right? Yeah. There's ways in which you can do that.
He was disingenuously sexist, and then he was disingenuously woke.
Because he didn't care about... That's the thing. It's like not like he was even being lascivious or whatever. He just put it in there because it's on a spreadsheet that can improve something.
Yeah.
He
wants to be Steven Spielberg, which is a problem because Steven Spielberg has a lot to answer for as well. Fucking hell. Do you know that Spielberg is producing this new horror TV series, which will be available on streaming?
No.
But you'll only be able to watch it after a certain time period. So you can only watch it after dark because it's scary. Yeah. Do you know what that's called? That's called TV programming, Steven Spielberg.
That's very fucking funny.
Talk about trying to reinvent the wheel. That's like Silicon Valley shit. Hey, we invented this incredible new highway. It goes underground. It's on rails. It's called a subway. Like, yes, we had this shit.
Yeah. And now it's, well, you just change the time on your computer or whatever.
Yeah, exactly. You just use a fucking VPN.
Yeah,
and
pretend you're in, yeah.
Piece of shit. Let's talk briefly about The Favour.
I mean, it has occurred to me during this last... 10-20 minutes of conversation that it would be interesting if at one point we sat together, watched a movie, got in the podcast, just and didn't talk about it. And I could, I mean, I want to talk about The Favour, but I could absolutely do that with The Favour and not feel any the worse for it.
No, I can, it's
not that it's the worst film we've seen, even.
It's when the film started, I said to you, maybe this film is good.
It starts with a wild dream sequence in like a wet, rainy, noirish night that looks a little like a cross between Cool World and Johnny Suede. With a woman in a red, like, leather long jacket or raincoat or something. And then she's walking along the street. She sees a football player. And he, like, he's spotlit on the dark street. And he turns to her and then takes her into an alley and ravishes her. And she then gets woken up by her child asking her if dead people swallow.
Pretty funny.
Which There's is actually, like, that's a good, that's film. A cool opening to a film.
Yeah.
And it is weirdly, like, it's this staid, half of it is this staid, boring, cliched, slightly... damagingly normative rom-com, and the other half is just firing on all cylinders, trying to be quirky and dream in being quirky madness. Making some genuinely fascinating decisions. Like there's one decision in which one of the protagonists, she is frustrated with her husband, played by Bill Pullman. She sees him like stumble on a staircase, but what you first see is him tumbling down the staircase, cut to his funeral. She's fantasizing about this.
She's imagining him dead because she's so bored.
And it's just surreal and strange and, like, vibrant in its bizarreness.
I want to set you a task, Dan Dixon.
Uh-huh.
I want you to explain the entire plot of this film in 4 sentences. I have 4 fingers up, and I'll drop a finger each one.
Can you give me the names of any of the characters or even the actresses?
And you know what? I'm not going to.
Okay, awesome. Because I'm...
Go on. There's no one famous in this film except for Brad Pitt and Bill Pullman. That's the context. All right, go on. You also have a time limit. You can't leave dead air. Go on.
There are two women who are old friends.
One
that
sentence.
Are
no. Go on. Okay. There are two women who are old friends that are
competitive about their sexual histories.
Okay. That's a good. That's pretty much the first act of the film.
Yeah,
you got 3 more.
One woman is trapped in a stale relationship with Bill Pullman, while the other woman is trapped in a kind of slightly tumultuous relationship with Brad Pitt, which she gets out of early on.
Two more sentences.
The titular favour of the film is Woman One, the Bill Pullman, not to define them by their men, but they're the famous ones. Bill Pullman's wife asking Brad Pitt's then ex to sleep with a former boyfriend who is now extremely manly and hot, and she does this and makes Bill Pullman's wife very jealous because she's stuck in this relationship with Bill Pullman, who actually seems kind of nice.
These are some Ducks Newburyport level sentences here. You're the going choicely in on me. You've got one more sentence. And you're like 30 minutes into the film.
Brad Pitt's ex becomes pregnant with what she initially says is the guy who looks like a lumberjack's baby, but in fact is Brad Pitt's baby. And we find this out in a cabin where Bill Pullman's wife, at the end of the film, where Bill Pullman's wife has gone to confront this man and maybe sleep with him about sleeping with, he's also her former boyfriend, about sleeping with the Brad Pitt's ex because she is very jealous, and Brad Pitt and Bill Pullman also turn up, and it turns out it's actually Brad Pitt's baby, and Bill Pullman brings her back, his wife, back to him by being very manly and punching. I can't do this. Yeah. It's such a, but I encapsulate a lot of the film.
You did pretty well. You did pretty well.
How could you do it?
Okay, shall I try?
Please.
You have to put your four fingers up so I can count, otherwise I can't.
Oh, yeah, but they're all down. I'll put up one for each sentence.
Okay. A blonde woman and a brunette woman are friends, and the blonde woman is in a marriage and the brunette woman is single.
Okay.
Because the blonde woman is feeling trapped by a domestic life, she asks the brunette woman to sleep with one of her ex-boyfriends to see if life could have turned out differently for her.
Wonderful.
The brunette woman does sleep with the ex-boyfriend, says the sex is really good, and that makes Brad Pitt, her own partner, very jealous of her, and makes the blonde woman very jealous of her for having had really good sex when she feels trapped.
Fantastic. I think you have been far more coherent than me. We are still only about 30 minutes into the film.
I know. Dan's got one more finger to go.
Brad Pitt's a painter, too. I could add that sentence.
Brad... No, no, that doesn't count. That doesn't count.
Okay, I'm fine. I'll forgive that.
Everyone converges on a cabin in the woods to find out who made the brunette woman pregnant.
Mm.
And it turns out that it's Brad Pitt. And the blonde-haired woman ends up feeling satisfied with her relationship with Bill Pullman.
Yeah, fantastic. I think it's an interesting... In some ways, that exercise clarifies some of the problems with my personality, which is I always feel so driven to get, like, all the details in. Mm. I'm very bad at understanding what I can leave out when I'm storytelling.
It's a scary skill. Yeah. I mean, Don DeLillo said of Americana, his first book, in retrospect, he was like, I didn't know you weren't meant to throw everything you had at a book.
Yeah.
And when you're a creative, you're like, oh, so I can do anything with these people? Yeah. And that kind of sucks. The hardest thing is knowing what to leave out.
It's one of the reasons I like the band The Magnetic Field so much, is because 80% of their albums have a specific set of restrictions.
Yeah.
And sometimes it really works, sometimes it does not.
Yeah.
But it's always like a new thing and interesting and contained. Like Distortion, where every song starts with the letter I.
That's something of a cheat, though, the I.
That's true.
One.
But retroactively name it. 50 Song Memoir, right?
Sure.
Solid album. And anyway, I like that kind of...
W.H. Auden, the poet, once said, there's nothing more freeing than restriction.
Mm.
I think it's very true in life and in art.
Yeah, absolutely. Some wisdom from the Brad Pitt cast.
from W.H. Auden.
It's real fire, the Brad Pitt cast. I think that's absolutely right. And I actually think, on that note, this feels like a film where people were just not sure what their restrictions are, both in terms of its sensibility and in terms of its plot. Because there's... characters are lots of different things through this film.
The protagonist, which
is the blonde woman, she is like wildly directed in a bunch of different like emotional... constantly insane, like unhinged. And at others, she's very grounded.
You're constantly catching up to the film. You're constantly only just understanding what the film is trying to tell you.
Yeah.
Like from the film going from like... Suddenly, you have no idea that the blonde woman has any kind of feelings of longing towards her ex-boyfriend.
Yeah.
You just don't. There's just a scene missing where she explains that she has an ex-boyfriend and she misses him.
Totally.
She just kind of announces this feeling of missing him. And none of the characters make any fucking sense. Mm. It's but you know what? It's not bad.
No. No, I mean, well, elements of it are bad. Some of the acting is bad. Some of the plotting is stupid. And we actually predicted a number of things about this film which did not eventuate, which would have made it a far better film.
We imagined that the brunette was lying about having slept with the ex-boyfriend and was like, but that's kind of...
Yeah. You know what? I wonder if that was in the script once. Because it turns out the fact that she has slept with him doesn't actually matter.
Nothing matters.
And I wonder if someone said, no, she has to... Like, someone in, like, giving notes was like, no, she has to sleep with him. Otherwise, people will be confused. Because it feels like that could have been reworked. Because it feels like the film is constantly foreshadowing the fact that she hasn't. Because he doesn't turn up until the end of the film, except in a couple of dream sequences.
I once did a philosophy course on the philosophy of language. And the course was run by a very well-liked lecturer who had studied under, like, some of the most famous people in the field. He'd studied under Quine. That's Brianna's alarm for water going off.
That's very pleasant.
He had studied under a lot of famous people, including W.V. Quine. And he once said about Quine, actually, this is a digression and a digression, he said about Quine, I studied under him, he was so funny, he was completely batty, they just wheeled him out at events, and the whole class laughed, and then the lecturer stared into space and said, he died small and sad.
Oh, jeez.
Fucked up. Anyway, yeah. This course was completely perplexing to me. It was about, like, what's the meaning of language, or how do we create a system of understanding what words mean?
Yeah.
And the thing, I never understood what the fuck was going on. I hated it. And I spoke to one of the people who loved this lecture, and I was like, that course was incomprehensible. I never understood anything he was saying. And the student said to me, the purpose of that course is you start... It tells you that it's going to be about discovering a meaning of language, and along the way, everything disintegrates to the stage where you realize that there can't be a meaning of language.
Yeah, wonderful.
And you're meant to implicitly ask those questions.
Mm-hmm.
That's kind of the favor.
Yeah, okay.
It's almost like it's presenting, like, this is going to be a film. Here are all the points of what's going to happen. And then slowly, everything just turns to, like, the sludge in RoboCop that, like, melts human flesh. It just, like, starts, like, everything...
It disintegrates around you.
You don't understand what anyone's doing for any reason. No motivations make sense. It is a total mess.
Yeah. It's really crazy. I mean, people just keep turning up in places, and it's not always clear why.
Announcing what they've just done.
Yeah.
Bill Pullman, there's a lot of exposition. At one point, hacks into an airport database.
Yeah, to get the flight records to see where his wife is.
So, a terrorist. So, if you made this film now, the FBI would bust in and shoot him in the head.
How many years would Bill Pullman go to prison for that? It's, like, significant.
And then that's the film.
Yeah.
Imagine if that's the turn the film makes at that point. Bill Pullman goes to jail for, like, 50 years.
I mean, I was kind of hoping. I talked about the moment earlier where it's Bill Pullman who his wife fantasizes about him dying. If Bill Pullman dies at that point, great movie.
Yeah.
Because he's kind of set up as, like, not really a bad guy, but, you know, their marriage has lost its spark. And
poor
so
Bill
think,
Pullman.
I know he doesn't deserve
it.
He's a beautiful man.
He's a good
boy. And he's very charismatic, and he's charming. I'd marry Bill Pullman.
Yeah.
But that would be a wild left turn.
If you just died.
And yeah, and that would be then really interesting. That would make this a more interesting film. And I think more than... Sometimes when we talk about this, like, what if this boring film had just done this crazy thing? We mean it in a way that is like, well, this film is just stale and boring. But in this film, a decision like that would actually make sense within the kind of atmosphere and aesthetic of the film, which is why it's so interesting, because it is kind of weird and startling in how it feels. So the fact that it doesn't do those things isn't just that it's a dull film, it's that it has no idea what it's doing.
There's just this scene where the blonde character is in a underground bunker.
Oh, yeah, in like a nuclear winter.
With like guns up. And the brown-haired woman is there on the camera trying to get into the bunker with a baby, like all malformed. And it comes out of nowhere. You don't even really realize it's a dream sequence. You know it is because it's just this crazy scene in the middle of the film.
Yeah.
What is the purpose? Like, I think the thing that most interests me about film in a lot of ways is that that means you have a bunch of people on set shooting a
nuclear
bunker.
Yeah, I love thinking about that. So like someone, some people have set it up. There's probably concept art.
Yeah. What is everyone saying to each other? Like, are they like, this will be funny?
There's a really wonderful segment of David Foster Wallace's essay on David Lynch called David Lynch Keeps His Head, where Wallace is on the set of Lost Highway. And he doesn't interview Lynch, but he talks to a bunch of the crew on the film. he just includes these like 1 to 2 sentence fragments of what the crew thinks the film is about, and there's all sorts of different things. A lot of people don't care, a lot of people are really pretentious about it, and I think that's a really wonderful encapsulation of what movie making must be like.
Sure.
Is all these people with slightly different understandings of what's going on somehow coming together to make something that hopefully is coherent, and I think demonstrates how amazing it is when the thing actually is coherent.
Sure.
And is does look like a single vision.
That's the argument, I think. You know, there's some people who are often like, auteur theory is just like dreamt up by a bunch of French wankers. I'm sorry, by the way, that it sounds like we're in the middle of a ship. There's pacing upstairs and there's like clattering in the kitchen. It sounds like we're in a submarine.
Imagine we're in a submarine. Yeah, use the wonders of your...
You know, I think about that often. You could make like a podcast with like a really low quality recording and weird background shit if you made that part of the
if
like,
that's aesthetic. Believable, right?
Yeah,
definitely. I'm sure that's been done.
If you imagine that we're like, I don't know, in Paris in like the Second World War
on a
center
on a footpath perhaps at a brasserie
like the fucking, you know, Sartre and his mates used to hang out and eat like the almond beauvoir. Croissants and beauvoir. That's exactly what it feels
where
like
we are.
I can't remember what I was saying.
It's a bad film. Ultimately, it's a bad film. It's a film that has flashes of quality and interesting decisions.
We should talk briefly. I mean, this whole fucking film.
We should talk about Brad Pitt.
Not very good.
He tries. No, he does try. I think something I said during it. There's a moment where he gets punched twice, which is quite funny. And in between the punches, he does a very Brad Pitt gesture, kind of a and it stands out because my sense is that he is consistently directed to be kind of less.
Yeah.
To not chew the scenery, to not expand himself to fill the room, which is what he does best. And I think it really suffers for that. Maybe he's just trying that out in this movie. But it's funny because it's a very theatrical movie. Brad Pitt normally thrives in that environment. And he's not that theatrical.
No.
And you're supposed to like him. So
you
it's weird that they
like
don't
him.
Give... I mean, either he's making bad decisions or they're just not giving him enough leeway.
I don't know what's going on because he does the thing... His voice is very reedy again. We've talked about it before. Pitt is... There is a direct analogy between the reediness of his voice and the quality of his performance. When he's very high, he's always bad. He's very high in The Dark Side of the Sun.
Yeah, that may be the highest in his first film.
Yeah. He's extremely attractive though, but he just is not good. He's like, if you saw this performance, I think, by somebody, you would be like, I don't know how much longer this person has a career in Hollywood.
Definitely.
Which is a horrible thing to say because I love this man and I love him even when he's bad.
And
I
he's also quite
that.
Interesting in this film.
Yeah.
I think he's more interesting in this film than most of the actors.
Do you know a thing that cracked Brad Pitt wide open to me?
Tell me.
We discovered it a couple of episodes.
Okay.
When in the Adam Sandler on Brad Pitt interview, Pitt says, "I love comedy."
Yeah.
And now... every single choice he makes that makes no sense.
Funniest choice.
I go, it's comedy. He wants to be a comedian. He wants to be a comedian. Mm. In this film, in every film. You know, he was on the Jim Jefferies show recently?
No.
Like the Australian comedian Jim Jefferies. He plays a recurring character. I was like, what the fuck? He's a weatherman.
Really?
Like a divorced dad weatherman. It happened just after the divorce with Jolie. So when I saw it happen, I was like, something's a little bit up with Brad that he's taking this kind of work. No.
He wants to be funny.
Why is he in Deadpool 2? He wants to be a fucking comedian. Why is he in this film? Because he thinks he can do like weird pratfall-y stuff in the middle of this fucked up rom-com.
And I think my favourite, and we'll get to this, I probably haven't said this so far, I think my favourite Brad Pitt performance is, can you imagine what it would be? I mean, I can just say.
Ocean's 11?
No, although I do like that. Burn After Reading.
Oh, sure.
I think that's... And it's because he's hilarious and straight up hilarious.
He's the funniest character in that film.
In a film of pretty funny characters.
Yeah, he's extraordinary in that film.
Yeah.
Yeah, he wants to be a comedian.
Yeah.
He wants... The face he makes right before he, spoiler
does,
alert,
yeah,
gets shot in the face. That, like...
it's wonderful.
It's great. The only other things I wanted to say about this batshit film before we do the Letterboxd game, because we got to leave enough time to do the Letterboxd game.
Definitely.
Because, you know.
It's part of the show's canon at this point.
It's the fabric of the show. This film was directed by a man called Donald Petrie. Do you know what the other films that Donald Petrie has directed?
No, I don't think so.
I've clicked on his letterbox profile. So now I have a photo of Donald Petrie smiling up at me. Looks like a lovely man.
He does look like a nice man.
He's
quite
a nice...
We should get him on the Brad Pitt cast.
We should. Here we go. Donald Petrie. Miss Congeniality. At least he made the first one. He didn't make Miss Congeniality 2. Okay. He did not return. How to Lose a Guy in 10 Days.
Oh.
Richie Rich. Huh. With Macaulay Culkin.
I think I saw that as a kid.
Just My Luck with Lindsay Lohan.
Oh.
Mystic Pizza.
I mean, these are quite famous films.
All some of the worst films ever made. Really? I think this might be the worst director we've ever covered. Grumpy Old Men. Oof.
I don't know what that is.
Little Italy, which came out recently.
I think I remember seeing people make fun of the poster.
Emma Roberts and Hayden Christensen as Italian children warring in a pizza dispute. It's Romeo and Juliet with pizza owners.
He's a man stuck in 1992.
What the fuck is this film? My Favorite Martian. Oh.
Have I heard of that?
It's
Maybe, is it based on a book?
No, it's got Hooji Wuzzy in it. Yeah, it's based on a book by Thomas Pynchon. Jeff Daniels and Christopher Lloyd.
That sounds
My Favorite Martian. My Life in Ruins. Welcome to Mooseport with Gene Hackman and Ray Romano.
Is that one of those old men driving around films?
US President Gene Hackman, who's retired after 2 terms in office, returns to his hometown of Mooseport, Maine, and decides to run for mayor against another local candidate, Ray Romano.
It feels like he's making films for an alternative universe in which 9/11 didn't happen.
Yes.
And they're somehow being filtered through to our world.
Yes. He is a pre-Empire filmmaker in a post-Empire world, as Bret Easton Ellis would put it. He's a pre-9/11 filmmaker living in a world where 9/11 happened. I got to do these last three because, The Associate, starring Whoopi Goldberg.
How is he... This guy's working.
Yeah.
He's still in work.
Opportunity Knocks. Starring Dana Carvey.
See,
The Failure.
I feel I've heard of all these films.
You know what this filmography tells to me?
Uh-huh.
He is a nice guy.
Yeah.
And big stars like working with him. They're like, he's no Spielberg, but
solid
payday,
and the movie might make a profit.
Yeah, he'll come in, he'll be nice to everyone, he'll handle a star's ego.
There are a bunch of really interesting decisions made in this film, right?
Yeah.
Like, that often aren't pulled off. But much more... It has a personality, which I did not expect I'd be able to say of this movie. I thought we would be way ahead of the film.
Yeah.
In a kind of aesthetic sense, which I don't think we ever were.
No.
Maybe in a plot sense, yes.
Not even in a plot sense. We were wrong about a lot of things that would happen in this film. What are you giving this out of 5 stars?
This is almost... I probably said this about a bunch of these films, and this is my problem, but this film is almost the reason I really struggle with the rating system, right? Because...
You say that about it fucking everything. You just don't want a letterbox.
It's hard for me.
It can. Make a letterbox.
But how do you put this up against...
Go on, do it, and I'll tell you.
I wouldn't say Troy or something.
Troy is 2.5 star. This is 2. Next question.
But this, the thing is, Troy is like... I saw Troy at the cinema and remember having a perfectly fine time. Probably quite like
2.5 star is pretty good.
Yeah, totally. Yeah, I might give it that as well. I'm not sure. I haven't seen it recently. I will soon.
It's a looming eventuality
in your life. Like the horse in... anyway.
In what?
The Trojan horse. The secret horse. What am I?
Secret horse.
I tried to paper over the fact that I couldn't remember the name of the Trojan horse.
Secret horse. The dog is looking at me. I'm sorry, Ida. He danced at the secret horse. Oh, that's actually
the name of the Mills and Boone novel I wrote under a pseudonym.
The secret horse will keep me warm on many a lonely night.
Exactly.
I just think of you, like, when I'm dying or I'm going through torture. I just think of Dan saying the secret horse. It doesn't really matter what you were saying before because you said the secret horse now. Ratings.
Two stars because 2 stars because it's weird.
But see, that's why... This is why I want you to make a rating system so I can shout at you. You said California was 1.5 star. This film is not better than California.
But California upset me, and this film didn't upset me. See, that's the thing. It's like, what metrics are we using? What criteria are we using?
Well, you can use...
Like,
you
obviously
can use the
California...
Dan criteria. And I guess the Dan criteria is, don't hurt me.
I think that's... True.
I think that is true. I didn't say that to be mean.
No,
I just laughed because it's...
I'm okay with it. And I think I just have a lot of problem with evaluation. I think I'm often just like, let's try this out.
Good thing you're a critic then.
Oh, gosh. I mean, it gives me stuff to write about though, right? Like, I'm not just saying this was good or this was bad. I'm like, who knows?
That's what we've talked a lot about before. I guess we can say this now because I wanted to get him on the podcast and Dan said it was a bad idea. There's an American film reviewer who's been a film reviewer since he was about six. Yeah. His name's Lights, Camera, Jackson. I think we've invoked him before. He's one of my favorite people in the world.
Sure.
But he is...
I love him too.
He's a young American boy. I think he's still like 19. Who...
I thought you were going to say James Ellroy before, but I only said we wanted to get him on the podcast. But...
Ellroy and Lights, Camera, Jackson. Yeah, duo.
Two poles.
Yeah. Lights, Camera, Jackson only gives evaluative responses, but they don't seem founded in anything.
So funny.
So he is your antimatter.
Yeah.
Lights, Camera, Jackson. He can just judge.
He's like, didn't love it.
Yeah, you hear him. He's got
the Irishman very long.
Yeah, he did a live stream where he was asked about the Irishman, and he was like, yeah, what is he like? Very long. Smarty. He was trying a lot of things. A lot of things on display. A lot of gangster stuff, but, you know, it didn't work.
I just imagine him watching that film and it's like a chicken watching that film.
But my feeling about Lights, Camera, Jackson is that he would be my best friend because I'm sure he would leap to tell me his star rating immediately.
Yeah, that's what's keeping us.
I wouldn't have to drag it out of him like I do with Dan Dixon.
I mean, how do you think about it, right? Like, is it... Because part of me is like, well, would I recommend this to someone... For a very specific set of reasons. And I just can't capture that within the system of stars.
I think I just have two sliding scales,
I really want to hear.
One is functionality and one is enjoyment. So anything below 2.5 stars means that it was not very functional. It didn't really work. But it can still sit high. In fact, maybe anything under 3 stars is like, this largely didn't work. But it can sit on 3 stars if I enjoyed watching the mess. I say by function is I mean like some degree of like coherence or internal logic. Actually, it doesn't even need that. It needs to have some sense of like I'm not constantly being confused by what the fuck's going on.
Let me give you an insight into... I think that's very enlightening to me for a number of reasons. I think that's convincing, decent system. I think part of me... is worried I'll give The Favourite 2 stars and someone will come along and be like, what are you talking about? Here are all the things that were wrong with it. I'm like, oh, I'm wrong. No.
A thing that's emerged throughout this podcast? Uh-huh. I don't think you have a competitive nature exactly. But you feel something when you're wrong.
Yeah.
That makes you not want to be wrong again.
That's definitely... true.
Love when I talk so vaguely. I sound like an alien.
No, I appreciate it. I think that's.
It's
not that I've lost, but it's something like that. No. I think you're right. I mean, I'm competitive about some things.
Whereas I think, to be honest, if it's being real, I think I'm too arrogant to have that worry. I don't think I'm wrong. If someone comes and says to me 2.5 stars for The Favour, I'm like, sure, shut the fuck up. Here's why you're wrong.
Yeah, I can never be. I basically have this underlying constant assumption that everyone else knows more of what they're talking about than me, while also having an ego that is too big, which is an interesting thing to reconcile. I don't think that's unusual
but
for
I
academics,
think
to be honest.
For me, it's the thing that you can't be wrong about your taste. That is what's guiding me. So I think I'm always right, but I also think if you said The Favour's a 5-star film, I want to get to know you. Like, I'm not saying you're wrong. I'm saying you're the most fascinating person I've ever seen.
Speaking of,
to quickly letterbox?
I think do letterbox. I kind of want to talk more about this, but let's letterbox.
We're under time pressure. Do you know how many of my friends have watched The Favour?
2. 1. Oh, close.
They haven't even rated it. Holly Horror. She just said that she'd watched it. Do you know how many people have watched it full stop?
1,200.
361.
Whoa.
Do you know how many people have reviewed it?
80.
28.
Whoa, I'm being outmatched. That's all interest. Sometimes, you know, you guess a thing and you're like, whatever, it doesn't matter. But those are all interesting, right?
Yeah. It's
Because this has Brad Pitt and Bill Pullman in it.
Yeah, sure. I did not know about this film before we said we were going to do this podcast.
Why is that? Because it's not...
You could almost see this being like a cult film.
Yeah, in some ways.
I don't know. I guess because fucking Orion went bankrupt and its release got bungled.
So.
Because it's not really a box office flop. It didn't make a lot. You don't judge it by those metrics.
Because I'm remembering this film. You know,
sure.
Sure.
Yeah. When suddenly there's like a nuclear bunker in the middle of a film.
That's interesting.
Thanks. That's what I always ask for, Dom.
Yeah, give me
and
something.
You just gave
weird.
It to me, and I'll remember you for it. Paige.
Let's hear it.
Reviewed this film. Paige's top 4 films. Harold and Maud. Have you seen that film?
No, I haven't. I did recently see a documentary about its director that was
you
quite
saw
good.
The Hal Ashby documentary?
Yeah.
Why? Have you seen a single Hal Ashby film?
Maybe one.
I don't remember.
I just remember watching the documentary. I might have. I just remember watching the documentary.
That was a secret horse moment.
I don't know. I just remember watching the documentary. Someone took
the
me.
The Landlord? Or Shampoo? I can't think of what
I probably haven't seen
it. The Last Detail?
No.
I might not have seen it.
I might not have seen a Hal Ashby film.
He's pretty good.
I mean, the documentary was interesting. Someone who likes Hal Ashby was like, "Do you want to go see this film about Hal Ashby?" I was like, "Sure."
He's pretty interesting, but hot take: I think Harold and Maud is his worst film.
Oh, that's interesting.
I don't think that's a good film.
Okay.
I think his best film is probably Being There. That's an amazing.
I would
film
like to see that
with
film.
Peter Sellers.
Yeah.
You would love that film.
I bet I would.
It's about an idiot. And that's your favorite kind of art.
I think it is actually
Carrie,
a sweet idiot. But yeah,
exactly.
Okay, good.
Carrie, Brian De Palma film.
A great film.
Yeah. On every other Monday, I'd say that's like the third best film ever made.
3.5 stars.
What did you say? Breaking Away. Very weird. Directed by Peter Yates, the British director.
Oh, yeah.
It's about cycling.
Huh.
It did very well at the Oscars. Like, it was widely nominated.
Okay.
That's the only reason I know that film. And Aliens.
Sure, haven't seen it.
Great film. 5-star film. Fake, says Paige. Who would leave 90s Brad Pitt? And who would even consider cheating on a harmonica playing Bill Pullman?
I mean, those are problems.
They are.
Genuinely. Especially
problems.
The harmonica. Like, Brad Pitt, kind of an asshole, not especially charismatic in this film.
Bill Pullman is great.
He's a darling.
You never think about the blonde woman, you should leave Bill Pullman.
No, and you never really even think the movie thinks that she should.
I said to you very early on, it was one of the few things I was right about.
Yeah.
It's like, I was like, they're staying together.
Yeah, I think maybe 10 minutes, 5 minutes in.
Yeah, it's obvious that they're not going to break up. And they don't. Maddie. This is a kind of interesting top 4 film. Phantom Thread.
Oh.
5-star film.
Sure. I've seen it once. I remember being a little bit underwhelmed.
Hmm.
You said the first time you saw that you weren't sure.
Oh,
right.
Yeah,
I should see it again.
I wasn't sure. I just...
I had very high expectations.
My barometers went spinning like crazy.
Yeah.
I was like, I don't know what is going on there.
Sure.
And now I watch it every second day. The Social Network. Great film.
That is a really good film.
Really good film. The score, Trent Reznor and Atticus Ross.
They really come into their own. Is that the first score they do, actually? Did you hear what he said about the score to Bird Box?
Yeah,
it was a fucking waste of time.
Yeah. Good on him.
Yeah, I like Trent Reznor.
I think Trent Reznor was one of our best rock stars. Now I think he's one of our best composers.
Yeah.
Have you heard his score to Watchmen? I mean, you have.
Yeah,
I've watched a fair amount of it.
It's great.
Oh, quick sidebar. We're running so close on time. It's a real Watchmen situation. I can see the fucking hands of the clock. I watched the rest of Watchmen.
Oh, good. Crazy.
Crazy. Contains both the best and worst stuff I've ever seen.
I think I'm 4 episodes in, maybe 3 episodes in. I'll probably watch it all.
The second to last episode is extraordinary. The last episode is awful.
All right.
And every episode contains a mix of both of those things. Wild. Before Sunrise, we talked about it before.
Oh, I love that film.
I love
very
that film
moved
too.
Yeah, really
yeah, deeply moved.
Broke me for a couple of days.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It does do that. Pride and Prejudice. Have
Which
you seen
one? Keira Knightley?
Yeah.
It's a good film.
Yeah,
I'm pretty sure
That's
I have
good.
Seen it. It is a good film.
Poor Matthew McFadden going from being fucking Mr. Darcy to being the dickhead in Succession.
Yeah, but he's great in Succession.
He looks so much like Brendan Fraser in Succession.
That's true. The kind of puffy face.
It's fucked up how much he looks like Brendan Fraser. Maddie. Pre-Fight Club Brad Pitt sure is something else. What a twink.
So, are we meant to understand that the only people who watch this film are women interested in Brad Pitt?
Not women, but people.
Sure, people, yeah.
Yes, 100%. Here we go. This is fantastic. I had to read you this one. I checked these way in advance because there's so few I could read them all. Shen Video, who is French.
Okay.
That will play a part in a minute. Top 4 films. Rocky.
Okay, haven't seen
it. I like Sly Stallone, but I don't like Rocky so
Interesting.
Much. Beverly Hills Cop.
Haven't seen it.
Eddie Murphy, one of the best actors
He's
on the
very
planet.
Very good.
1990, The Bronx Warriors. Fantastic film. A Warriors ripoff that is extremely, extremely good.
Wild.
Yeah, it's on Amazon Prime Video.
They've got a lot of weird, like,
Amazon
trash
Prime
stuff.
Video is my streaming service of choice.
Okay.
Which is a shame that Amazon is killing the planet, but you know.
You
take your pledges where you can get them. Between Sweet and Salt Water.
Mm-hmm.
Michelle Brohl. I haven't even heard of that film. 1967. Dan keeps looking at the time.
No, it's okay. Sorry. Don't look at my face. I'm often just looking to see if the sound, how the sound waves are going, where I should sit.
Okay.
I'm not. I understand. I give a sense of urgency, but it's all right.
Here's Shen Video's review. 2.5 stars, by the way. The other two didn't even rate it.
Okay.
So Shen Video's on our side. Here we go. So he's French. La Malite de Kenwall est épique.
Oh, Kenwall's epic.
The mullet of
Kenwall. Oh, mullet. Yeah. I did.
Interesting brief sidebar about Kenwall. I've seen him. He's the mullet wearing.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
As Shen Video had.
The man in the cabin.
Yeah, the rugged portrait of American masculinity that turns out to be false and corrupt.
Which is weird, because he seems like a nice guy initially, turns out to be a dick. And he doesn't need to be in the film, either.
The more of a dick he becomes, the more you notice that he has a monobrow.
That's true. It's weird. Like, remember the video game Fable, where if you become, you're evil, you become...
ugly.
I often think about that.
And you get fat.
Yeah, it's a real bad...
That's problematic. Kenwall.
The myth of physical beauty and... association with moral virtue. Anyway, whatever.
Kenwall, who plays this mullet guy, I've only seen him in one other film. It's directed by Abel Ferrara, and it's called The Gladiator. And Ferrara was tasked with by Canadian television to make a film against drunk driving. So what he turns it into is a guy whose wife gets killed by a drunk driver who then goes and kills people. I mean, I've definitely thought twice about drunk driving.
Sure.
Andy being sober. Okay, here we go. Sam, Lawrence. Here you go. Top 4 films. You know, we've talked about almost all of these. The Royal Tenenbaums.
I like it.
No, why did I make that noise? Yeah. It's a good film.
To be in someone's favourites list, they're not the most... It doesn't say the most interesting thing about a person to have the Royal Tenenbaums in their top 4.
This is what I'm responding to with the top 4 here. Apocalypse Now. We've talked about it.
Great movie.
Okay, sure. But you're not telling me anything about your taste.
You're an algorithm.
Yeah, you're Barack Obama.
Not that big thing was in there. Has he listened to Not? Anyway.
Was it really in there?
Yeah, it was.
He just watches TV.
That was
a
Frank Ocean single.
All he does is sit there and watches TV, and if you play your song on TV, it's like, oh yeah.
That's interesting.
He did it with Courtney Barnett. He put her in it, and she'd performed on Late Night TV.
I bet he does watch Colbert. Yeah.
I bet he records every late night program.
I mean, I'm enjoying that image of Obama, to be honest.
Yeah, and his boxers eating a frozen dinner, not at all thinking about the fact that he killed thousands of people with drone strikes.
Sure, imperialism, etc.
Phantom Thread.
Okay, you know. Yeah, I'm against those films.
You know.
Yeah, we're all on board.
Yeah. Okay. Thanks. That's mean, Sam. You can have your taste. Just tell me something you like that's unusual.
Sure.
DM me, Sam Lawrence. Not even the best actor alive, Brad Pitt, could say. You should listen to this podcast, Sam.
Yeah.
Ignore
this is
the fact
for you.
We were just very rude about you. We're not rude about you. We love you. Okay. I'm gonna do 2 more. Is
sure.
That right.
That's
I
totally
only did
okay.
2 more once.
No. Yeah. Well, so far.
Top 4 of Kayla. La La Land.
You don't like that film.
Bad film. The Big Short.
Which the director of whom might be directing Brad Pitt in his next feature.
Yeah.
The Big Short. I like The Big Short.
No, bad film.
It's a good film.
Ad Astra. Bad film.
Mediocre film.
Gone Girl. Good film.
Haven't seen it.
You haven't seen it?
No.
You haven't seen all the Finches?
I started watching it on a plane, but didn't continue.
It's a hard watch.
That's
on
what
plane.
I figured.
It's
very dark.
Wrong.
And
Yeah, and very dark.
Which
I mean, that's Fincher.
Yeah.
He'll eventually make a film that's just complete black. Just be Trent Reznor and like
that's
people
it.
Saying dialogue and just darkness. here's Kayla. So this is half a thirst watch.
For all of us, I think.
Yeah, for all of us. I mean, he's extremely
maybe
hot
3/4,
film.
Yeah.
It may get a 0.5 star added for Brad, but there wasn't enough Brad, okay? So the 2 rating is staying. I also decided to rewind it back to the first time I saw him shirtless after the credits. Listen, you and me both. As for the story, however, I don't see the appeal of capital M man Tom. Not when Bill Pullman looked dreamy. Yes, I think it's a severe problem. I think Bill Pullman being so good
hurts
the film.
And it's not just that he's sexy, which is fine. He's charismatic.
Yeah.
As well. So there's no real... You don't understand what's happening.
No. Why does she dream about him dying?
Yeah.
Maybe that was what women liked in 1994, but I'll politely say no thank to you. Thank you. That's funny. On a closing and slightly spoilery note, I would do anything to nurse Brad Pitt's bruises.
Oh, nice.
That's kind of the plot of Phantom Thread.
Yeah.
You have a man who you make sick so you can comfort him. What a great film that is. Okay, here we go. Ruspon. Oh, they don't have a top 4. Ignore me. Dan, the time is freaking me out.
We've
got 6 minutes.
Yeah.
Is it all right? You've got a family function to
go
to.
I do, yeah. No, they'll miss me.
What will
Let's
they
do
say?
One more quickly.
Will you rock up and be like, sorry, I was recording my Brad Pitt punk?
Listen, if you want to see what kept me.
That kind of makes me want to make you laugh.
No, please.
Paul Derrick. A really interesting top 4 to finish us off.
Mm.
Don't Look Now. Have you seen that film? Nick Rogue, a great British director who died recently. A couple, their daughter dies, and then they go to Vienna, and there are murders there.
I thought I'd seen it, but no, I haven't.
It is a great film. Okay. It also definitely has unsimulated sex in it.
Oh, damn.
Everyone said at the time, they were like, hey, is that... That looks like unsimulated sex. And Rogue and everyone involved was like, no. It definitely has that. You're fucking lying to me. The Last of the Mohicans.
Oh, yeah.
Directed by Michael Mann.
Starring Daniel Day-Lewis.
Yeah, pretty good film.
Okay, I haven't seen it.
Racist. But
sure, of course.
Yeah, you know, as an object, it kind of works. The Neverending Story.
Oh, also haven't seen it.
Do you know who that film was directed by? It'd be pretty funny if you knew, but you haven't seen it. His name is Wolfgang Petersen.
Uh-huh.
He's an austere German director who makes Das Boot.
Oh, wild.
Air Force One, In the Line of Fire.
Oh.
And, amongst other things, Troy.
Huh.
So we will talk about that. Complete psycho.
That's a wild filmography.
He's like 120 years old. He's still alive. He's very old. That was rude. Wolfgang, if you're listening, I'm sorry. We'll get to you soon. We'll say nice things because you're pretty good. And Halloween, the John Carpenter film, which you need to see.
I will, I promise.
Here we go. Do you want to know
Derek's
review? 6.5. Do you like that as a place to end, Dan? I thought you'd like
good
that.
On you, Paul. Hey, sorry we have to rush this, but thank you so much.
What time are we at?
5:06 at 5:06 p.m. We're just over an hour
Do you want to... No, we don't. Do you want to have a single thought?
Yeah. I mean, only watch The Favour if you really have nothing else to watch, I would say. Oh, that's... It's not... Don't rush out to see The Favour. If you're in the mood for a bizarre romantic comedy, maybe check it out. That, like, it's not good. I don't know.
It's very hard to find. I had to buy it for, like, $4.
Which is interesting in of itself. We're probably some of the only people in the world who've seen The Favour.
I mean, that the letterbox would suggest that we definitely are some of the only people in the world. You know... Yeah,
the privileges of the Brad Pitt cast.
What's that?
The privileges of the Brad Pitt cast. For real.
Genuinely.
You know? Yeah.
This podcast is fascinating to me because we talk about films that you would cross the street to avoid talking about this film.
Definitely.
Imagine if
being
like,
trying to be pinned down on this film as we did to each other earlier.
Imagine if the New York Times came to you and was like, Dan,
write about
big news, big break for you. you have to write about fucking 1994's The Favour.
It would be excruciating.
What would you say? Would you have to be like The Favour in the age of Trump?
Yeah, I'd have to do like a meta thing about the nature of romantic comedy and its falseness or something.
I don't know. Or just be like, Brad Pitt's really hot.
Yeah. At least Brad Pitt as interesting object. But what else are you doing? Bill Pullman is kind of sad. That's interesting.
Yeah. We were saying he has like failed leading man energy. Yeah. Like Aaron Eckhart.
Yes. That was a wonderful comparison.
Because they both have kind of rubber mask faces.
Yeah.
And you could imagine they could either be extremely sexually potent or not sexually potent at all.
Exactly. All right. I'm so sorry. I hate this for all of us, but we gotta go.
It's fine. An hour episode. We came in, we came out.
We're providing content. We'll be back soon.
The next episode, the interview with the vampire episode, will be 7 hours long.
Definitely. It'll
be our fucking Satan tango.
Yeah. We'll just be very slow. Meditative.
Yeah.
Playing against type. All right.
Love you. Love you. Welcome to 2020.
Welcome to 2020. Happy New Year.
Yeah, happy fucking New Year.
A year full of Brad Pitt.
Yeah. The whole year we'll be doing this shit till 2021.
Yeah, for sure. It's been a lot of films.
Yeah.
Great.
Love you.
Bye. See you next time.
Bye.